Thank you for listening. Thank you for downloading. You're with us here at the Clock End Talk. You can follow us at clockend_talk. I was snuck in on your little podcast app this time round for a quick preview or quick review of the Europa League game that we played, and we'll also preview the Everton game. We won't take live callers this week. We'll do the live callers after the Everton game. The Europa League's just basically a quick little short podcast to get some content here to our valued listeners. Each and every week, I'm joined by two lovely lads. Well, I say lovely, but they... I'll let you be the judge of that. Tony, how are you, mate?
Yeah, not too bad, thanks. I would question the lovely as well, and I'm one of the people you're talking about, so a bit unsure about that one.
And Schwinn, how are you, buddy?
Doing well. Having won 3 points yesterday, not in the most convincing manner, but you know what? Sometimes you just got to let the boys go out there and have fun, and I think that's exactly what they did yesterday, so happy days.
Happy days, mate. A couple of wins in a row as well. Tony, I was a little bit shocked at the lineup when I seen it come out. What was your thoughts?
I was initially. Obviously, we all know. Well, anyone that listened to last week said I said I expected a lot more changes. I suppose looking into it, there's reasons that you can kind of agree with a lot of the things that happened. So, Aubameyang, I think, was purely on the pitch to get himself a goal or two and get a bit of confidence, and obviously that's what happened. Then Socrates, I was a bit surprised about, especially playing him on the right of the centre-backs, because we know in the first team he's going to be playing on the left, so that shocked me a little bit. But apart from that, I don't think there was anything too majorly surprising. Monreal, I guess, had to play when we were speaking during the week and we was looking at the potential options for to play at left back, and we were struggling to pick a name, so that probably wasn't overly surprising. And I tweeted just before the game, if you look at the first game last season, we had Coleman at home and we went quite strong there. I can't remember exactly, but I know Alexis played, I know Bellerin played, and Kolasinac came on at half time, and at that time he was our first choice left back. But I remember thinking, everyone being surprised how strong we were that day, so maybe they just want to get a start, get the 3 points on the board, and then go from there. So maybe that was their thinking.
Yeah. Schwinn, Mafropanos, you thought maybe he might start over Socrates?
That was the inclination I had when we recorded, 4 or 5 days ago. But I noticed someone mentioned on Twitter that he has been carrying a knock. I think it's a minor groin injury that he's been carrying. I think he's fine now from what I read, but maybe it was just something that the manager didn't want to risk and hence was not included on match day.
Mm-hmm. No, it was a shock for me too. I thought he would have been playing, but if you said he has a knock, I suppose. So. Boys, so we got the win up, obviously 3 points, 4-2 over Vorskla. I know absolutely nothing about him. You boys might, but hey, look, my worry was, Tony, we conceded the two. That was always a worry. It just seemed like the same old Arsenal.
Yeah, I mean, ideally you'd keep a clean sheet. And I think in a way the game was too easy. They were very poor. We'd made some changes. Even at 4-0, it had that feeling. Do you know, like when you're watching an international game and your team or any team's just made 7 subs and all of the pace dies and it becomes like just a walk in the park? It had that feel at 4-0, and you would like to see the players fight to keep that clean sheet, but I just think it was so easy that they thought they could do it on autopilot, and then they made a mistake and Vorskla scored, and the second goal was quite good, to be fair. But I mean, I'm not reading too much into it. I've seen a lot of people disappointed are always conceding goals, not keeping clean sheets, but do you know what I mean? If you're 4 or 5 nil up and the game's that easy, although I would love to get in the habit of keeping clean sheets every week, it's very easy to switch off in that position. Everyone gets complacent in their job from time to time. And I feel that yesterday wasn't down to a lack of ability, because whilst we was on the game in the first 60 minutes, they didn't have a sniff. I don't think they had a shot, or not a meaningful one. So it's just a bit of complacency, and that worries me a lot less than conceding in all the other games where it's been a lack of ability, to use a better word.
Well, I probably did jump the gun a bit there by going the two on the conceder, but let's talk about the positives. So, Schwinn, I'll go to you. The first goal, Aubameyang, 32nd minute. Happy days, mate.
Very good goal. Quick goal on the counter. It's, you know, one of those things that we have the pace to excel at, but I feel like it's not something we capitalize on a lot. Mkhitaryan was very, very quick to recover the ball and then run at the opposition. And then credit to Iwobi for passing the ball to Aubameyang from his weak foot. And to his credit, I think Iwobi had a very good game yesterday. I think he was one of the brighter sparks, particularly in the first half. And he seemed to be the only one who was causing a threat. Good finish by Aubameyang, good for his confidence. And I think just before he scored the second goal, he also had a crack at the goal, which hit the post, if I'm not wrong, which would have been a good goal as well. So as Tony said, a start for his confidence, and two goals is definitely not going to hurt that.
Mm-hmm. And then Tony, I'll let you go with Welbeck and then Aubameyang for the third goal, mate.
Yeah, so Welbeck's goal, he's put himself in a good position. It kind of goes on what we were talking about last week when Lacazette and Aubameyang, when if Lacazette plays up front and Aubameyang plays on the left, you would hope that Aubameyang would join him in the area when the ball's over the other side. And for that goal, that's pretty much what happened. But obviously, Danny was playing on the right. So the ball was out on the left and Danny's got himself very central. Great ball by Mkhitaryan. The ball was so good, the keeper basically gave up. Welbeck just had to miss the keeper and it was a goal. But it's similar. You can see the way the things we're trying to do in the, what I would call the first team with, as I said, if Aubameyang's wide but the ball's on the right, he should tuck in and make it a second striker. I spoke about that quite a lot last week. So that was more pleasing than anything else with that goal, that they're still trying to implement similar moves or similar styles to what the first team are. Aubameyang's second goal. Well, actually saying that on the first goal, although it was a great ball by Mkhitaryan, I think if he'd have played a better ball to Iwobi, I think Iwobi probably would have scored or at least been one-on-one. Aubameyang's second goal, I thought his touch around the defender, which was class at the time, and a lot of people around me in the ground as well, thought he was trying to give it back to Mkhitaryan. It was only when I saw the replay and saw that there was quite a big distance between the two that I saw it as a great first touch. And I know Schwinn's going to come onto this later about keepers being too far off the line, but their keeper was so far off his line, given where Aubameyang was shooting from. He literally just had to bend it around the post and the keeper had no chance. Mm-hmm. So great touch, great finish. I think he knew he was coming off because the sub's already warmed up. But yeah, the keeper made it very easy for him.
Mm. And the reason I give you two, because I thought I'd better let Schwinn take the Ozil goal.
I'm happy you did, because more than Ozil, I want to talk about Socrates in the build-up to that goal, who I thought was exceptional on the day. You know, I think all three of us unanimously were not satisfied with that signing, and he's proven us wrong so far this season. And he did very, very well to find Lichtsteiner between the lines there, and Lichtsteiner, to his credit, just lofted the ball into the middle of the box. That final Mesut Ozil, who just stabbed it home. So it's not a tough finish. Good for his confidence. Good for him to come off the bench. Wasn't expecting to see him yesterday, but good for him to come off and score a goal.
Mm-hmm. Now, boys, I type switched off 4-0 up and the two goals. So I didn't exactly see the two goals. But I'm just looking at who scored here, Tony, and they've got an error for Lichtsteiner on one goal.
Yeah, a corner was, I think it was a corner or a wide set piece, was headed out by Holden, and it kind of bounced around, came back in and got stuck under Lichtsteiner's feet, and their players taken the ball and pull it in. Great finish. For me, and I know Schwinn's about to disagree with this, for me there's absolutely nothing Leno could do. It is what it is. Some shots don't get saved. And this is why, I just said this to you guys, but this is why a couple of weeks ago when we had a question saying, oh, I can't believe Cech's still starting because he hasn't kept a clean sheet. You're saying you can't qualify a keeper's performance just on whether they kept a clean sheet or not, because some shots or some chances, there's just nothing you can do about them. And I would put both of Worsley's goals yesterday into the same category as I would with most other goals that we've conceded, in that the keeper wasn't at fault. There was nothing they could do about it. I don't think Cech's conceded a goal yet where I thought, oh, we should have done better there. And the same with both of the goals yesterday. At no point did I go, oh, Leno looked a bit suspect. For me, they were just goals that don't get saved.
Mm-hmm. And before anyone says, oh, Tez didn't watch the fucking end of the game, we got up at 5 a.m. to watch it. And by the time the finish is about 7:30 in the morning, it's time to head to work. So, Schwinn, your thoughts, mate, on the two goals that were conceded?
I mean, as Tony said, it's tough to argue with the way he framed it, because yes, there is a high possibility that he, you know, that those goals couldn't be saved. On the first one we conceded, I felt like Leno left his line and was maybe at the 6-yard line once the ball got headed out of the box, but never repositioned himself once the ball came towards Lichtsteiner. This isn't to say that the ball would have been saved if he was better positioned, or if he could even be better positioned. But what I felt when I watched the game and saw a replay or two was that if he was a bit closer to his line, maybe it would have helped. Maybe not, but that's just the sense I got at that point. So I don't want to bash the guy, because as Tony said, he didn't really have a lot to do. He started the game off bright, actually, found Elneny with a nice dink, which we've never seen Cech do. He's obviously comfortable on the ball. Is happy to venture out of the box when we are playing in the opposition's half to provide that out ball in case we are being pressured. So he's obviously comfortable, and he's obviously not worried about what's behind him. I just felt that at that particular moment he could have done better. On the second goal, I'm not quite sure. I haven't seen a replay, but it was just a tidy finish, I feel, and there's not a whole lot he could have done there.
Now, if you look at who scored, they rated him a 5.7, as I touched on you boys before we started here. You can find Savvy's ratings. Savvy does our ratings. Clockandtalk.blogspot.com. He rated him a 6.5. Schwen, where would you be at, mate?
I think that's maybe a bit harsh. I think who scores is very harsh, because they tend to go by statistical ratings. I think they don't factor in any of the qualitative things. They mostly go on numbers, solely go on numbers. That would be my guess. As for Savvy's rating, 6.5, I mean, I can understand why he'd probably give a slightly lower rating than what I would, you know, maybe just a bit disappointing. I'm not sure when he did the rating. If it was just after the game, then, you know, maybe it was a bit emotional. I'd probably give him a 7.5, you know, first game. Didn't really make a mistake, maybe half a mistake based on what I just spoke about the first goal. But all in all, tidy, confident, and reassuring. I think no one's going to come out of the game saying that he's not going to challenge Cech. I think that's pretty much still open for debate. You know, it's not as if that Cech clearly has the number one spot. Obviously, we know Emery favors him. But if things get rough, then it's not as if Leno is not a contender. And I think based on that, a 7.5 would probably be fair, in my opinion.
And you agree with that, Tony?
Yeah, I mean, I find it very difficult to score, because he literally had nothing to do. So you can't say he was excellent, but you can't say he was bad. So this always varies from person to person. But whatever you have as average, I would give him that, not because he was average, but you can't mark him down for having nothing to do, or you can't mark him up for having nothing to do. So I think you've just got to give him sort of whatever score you kind of start the game with. Some people will say that's a 6.5. Some people will say that's a 7. Do you know what I mean? For me, whatever you find as average, for me, I say 7. I think 7 is a good average game. Yep. And that's what it was for me.
Did nothing wrong, did nothing, you know, wasn't really needed, I suppose.
Yeah, I mean, as I said, I think they only had two shots on target that any of us wouldn't have saved, and he had no chance with them, so you can't blame him. But then because he didn't make any other saves, that's not his fault they didn't have shots, but you can't rate him on anything because he had nothing to do.
Mm-hmm. Okay, man of the match?
For me, Aubameyang. I've been banging this drum for ages that you've got to accept he's going to do nothing but then pop up and score a goal. So when he does do that and score two goals, and it breaks a deadlock and makes them come out a little bit because they were 11 men behind the ball, you have to give him credit for that. So I can see why people wouldn't give it to him, but for me, he done exactly what he was on the pitch to do.
And you, Schwen?
Yeah, tough to argue with that, especially when your two goals are the ones that are the difference. Just for the sake of a different answer, I'll say Iwobi. I thought he was bright, and as I said earlier, he seemed to be the only one who was threatening, particularly in the first half. So good performance, different from what we've usually seen from him. Used his body very well, used his feet very well, and good for him to get that assist.
I'm gonna go with you, Tony, on the Aubameyang. But just, I'll get you to explain to the listeners, because you were talking to us before the podcast, before we started recording, when we're looking at some heat maps and whatnot on Aubameyang with 21 touches. Just repeat the listeners what you were talking to us about.
Yeah, he's just the type of player that doesn't get involved too much, doesn't have many touches. He's not going to hold the ball up against defenders, but he's predatory when he's in the area. So, I mean, once you know that, you can kind of appreciate more what he does. Some people will say, oh, it's ridiculous that he only had 21 touches and I'm giving him man of the match. And as I said, I'd understand that. But for me, that's the type of player he is. And if you're going to start rating him on anything else, then you're going to start thinking he's a shit player, which he's definitely not. He has a very specific job. He's very good at that job, but he won't offer you much else. And I just think that's what it is with him.
Yeah, yeah. And what were you saying, Schwinn? Might have been Tony as well. Ozil had 53 touches.
That was Tony, wasn't it? I think he was comparing Mkhitaryan's touches to Mesut Ozil's. What were the numbers, Tony?
I can't remember the exact numbers, so I don't have it in front of me. But 60, I think it was only 64 for Mkhitaryan. And 50 what, 3 for Ozil?
53 for Ozil, yeah.
Yeah, so Mkhitaryan played roughly, what, 60 minutes more?
Yep.
And had 11 more touches. It doesn't really show you anything. It just, for me, it highlights, as I said, I always say I think everything goes through Ozil with us. Even when we're good, when we're bad, when he's good, when he's bad, everything still always tries to go through him. This is an indication of quality, but it just shows that the team obviously think that as well, because to have the same amount of touches in well, not the same, but only 11 difference with an hour less played is, for me, unbelievable. I think it probably also shows, and it's something that I've been banging the drum about, and I know Schwinn has, how hard Ozil does work to get on the ball. Even when he's playing at 10, he drifts left, he drifts right, he comes deep. Sometimes he's high up, he scored within the 6-yard box. So, I mean, a lot of people obviously think he's lazy and think he doesn't run, but to get that amount of touches in that amount of time, believe me, he's not stood still.
Yeah, and that's why I brought it up, because I thought when you were talking about it earlier, it was quite interesting, actually. Okay, boys, let's get into some questions, because, as I said, we're only doing a short podcast today. Just to recap on that, answer a few questions, then we'll do a quick preview of the Everton game. Shree says, Tony, do you think Iwobi has improved physically? He seems much stronger on the ball recently.
I think we've got a few questions about this. For me, I think he's always been very strong on the ball. To me, it's probably his best asset. It's why, and Wenger always said he used to like playing him in big games because he's very difficult to press. He sticks his arse out and you can't really do too much about it. So, I think maybe he's improved, I don't know, but I think he's good. I can't really answer that question any other way.
Yeah, no, because Hakon Larsson also chimed in.
And yeah, said, that's who else I saw.
Yeah, and quicker, and then they've continued. Oh, yeah, I forgot to mention that. He seemed quicker over longer distance, not just a 5-yard burst.
Again, I don't think Iwobi's ever been slow. He may be, for me, actually, I know they said he's stronger. I think he looks a little bit trimmer. And he's always been quick. My issue with him, or one of my issues with him, is he's not fit enough. He's always been a 60-minute player. And when he first came into the team, he was young and you thought, oh, he's new, it's a new experience. Fitness will come, but it never has. You can guarantee he's going to come off after 60, 65 minutes because fitness has never been his thing.
Schwinn, Hakon Larsson, I expect a siege on their half, but we looked a bit clueless sometimes. Elneny did not make any sense for me. Leno looked comfortable, in my opinion. We have a striker dilemma, and that is a very good thing.
Yeah, there's two, three things there. I'll just gloss over Elneny because we all know he really didn't do anything. Didn't do anything wrong, but didn't really make an impact as such. And we discussed Leno. I don't think we have a striker dilemma. The dilemma maybe insinuates a problem. I don't really think that's really the case. We have two very talented strikers, and to me that means competition. I think the term problem comes in if we persist with one sort of system, and if it's not working, then we continue persisting with it, as we've seen with our formation, for example, so far. We know that there's different ways of deploying our players that might give better dividend, and Emery has stuck with his system, And that has, of course, meant Aubameyang on the left, which not all of us are fans of. I think that there's time for Emery to evolve. It's still quite early, and I'm not quite sure whether I want to see that as a problem quite yet. Both strikers are scoring. They're happy to play with each other. They're fond of each other. Maybe the word dilemma comes in if we persist, and I'm not quite sure whether we're going to do that just yet.
AFC, I think it's Quicksort, something like that. There's been a lot of talk about Ozil and Ramsey, but we're overlooking Mkhitaryan as a potential number one, Tony.
He said 10, number 10, not one.
Oh, sorry, number 10.
Fuck. Be a strange keeper. For me, the issue, not an issue, I guess, Mkhitaryan doesn't offer any more impact as a 10 than he does on the right. So for me, it doesn't really make sense to play him at 10. I'd rather have him on the right because he doesn't get any less involved. And it would allow Ozil to play 10. Look, for me, it's very simple, and I know Shrim will agree. I'm not sure about you. If you have to pick one 10 out of all of the ones we've got, it's Ozil. And even, as I said, if you're going to play one of them on the right, I'd prefer Mkhitaryan on the right to Ozil. So for me, that kind of relationship works. And I have a love-hate relationship with Mkhitaryan because within the same game, and he done it again yesterday, he'll do so much bad, but he does some excellent and top quality stuff. As I said, the ball for Welbeck's goal was outrageous. The turn for the first goal, although he doesn't get an assist, was very good. He started the attack. He got the assist for Aubameyang's second goal. But then he also does some stuff that's utter garbage during games. They all do that. But for me, I've got a love-hate relationship with him. But as I said, if I was going to play a 10, it'd be Ozil. And to be honest, at the moment, Mkhitaryan would probably be my first-choice right-winger. He didn't do himself any favours against Chelsea, where I know he got a goal and assist, but he completely neglected his defensive duties. And I'm not sure, did he start against West Ham? I'm not sure whether he did, but since then he's obviously not been in favour as much. He's definitely dropped at Cardiff and didn't make it back into the team for Newcastle. So I think maybe he just needs to brush up on his defensive duties when he's playing on the right.
My only thing, I agree with what you say. Ozil's, for me, he's probably the best number 10 we've got. Just quickly though, I wonder if Mkhitaryan and Aubameyang have a bit better combination than Ozil and Aubameyang. Maybe Ozil maybe better with Lacazette, you know what I mean, like just in combinations
potentially. But again, a lot of time, I know he wore 10 at Dortmund, but he did play from either of the wings a lot of time. He played with Aubameyang at Dortmund, and as I said, I think when he plays wide on the right, he drifts in and he takes up 10-like positions. So, as I said, for me, I don't think you gain anything by putting him at 10 over on the right, apart from you get the poorness in the defensive duties, but we get that whether it's Ozil or him, really.
Yeah.
So, as I said, for me, it would be... And you've got to also factor the first team, Aubameyang's not playing up front.
No, he's on the left, yeah, true.
Yeah, so again, you say if you play him at 10 because he works well with Aubameyang, but Aubameyang's on the left, then it's kind of counterproductive.
Just touching on that, and I want to move on, but like I think I've got a real beef with that. I think Aubameyang is our best to go up front. I don't know. Just Aubameyang for me on the left, I don't think it's working. I think Aubameyang, and we've said it here plenty of times as well, for me Aubameyang is best suited for Arsenal up front.
I couldn't agree more. I know there's a big difference of opinion, but for me, it's Aubameyang. But again, you have to accept that he's not going to do much but score goals. That's where the difference comes in. I think Lacazette is very good, much better, different league to Aubameyang in terms of link-up play, but less likely to score. So he'll do more but score less, whereas Aubameyang will do less but score a hell of a lot more. And that just depends on what you value.
I wonder why Lacazette hasn't been trialled on the right or left.
Yeah, I mean, you don't really need link-up play there. I don't know if fitness is an issue. As I said, there's always been rumours about it. How true it is, I guess we'll never know. But if fitness is an issue, you don't want him having to do the defensive duties because he won't be able to do it.
Throw on another curveball. How would Lacazette play in a 10?
Well, that's what I initially thought might be the way they go about it, to be honest, with Lacazette as sort of like a false nine, but behind an actual nine.
Yeah.
Obviously, the issue is with the players we've got that can play at 10, it probably isn't needed for him there.
Because then you got to find a place for Ozil. It's hard. Hang on, I think we do have a striker problem, Schwinn. We've got too many of them.
I mean, it is a bit to do with square pegs and round holes, isn't it? Because we're speaking about 10s, but guess who plays 10 on the weekend? It's Ramsey. It's not Mesut Ozil. It's not Lacazette. It's not Mkhitaryan. It's Ramsey. So you're making these problems in a way, you know. And for me, for all of Ramsey's qualities, if you're going to play him higher up the pitch, don't play him. Play Mkhitaryan instead, because for me, he's the only one out of our front four who takes players on, who's comfortable on the half turn, who can get around a corner. And we don't really have that sort of dynamism. You know, Aubameyang is great when he's one-on-one against a defender and he has the goal and he has a lot of space to run into. But 4 or 5 yards, I feel Mkhitaryan can do a bit more damage. And this is nothing against Aubameyang. This is, you know, more so in favor of Mkhitaryan. You know, I've said a couple of times in the last couple of weeks that for me, Mkhitaryan really stuck out. I know he hasn't made the cut recently, but for me, he has to be a part of the team on weekends in the Premier League. And we probably won't see him this weekend because Ramsey was given the rest. But he's the only one for me that brings that extra spark and takes some of the creative load off of Mesut Ozil. And as Tony mentioned, he plays on the right, which means Mesut Ozil can come in centrally. I think if he does pick up his defensive game, then he's got a bigger shout than Ramsey to be a part of the team.
Okay. Sarvesh, she says, Schwinn, do you think it was right decision to play some of our first 11 players for the match? Fatigue might cause a problem and Everton is not a pushover team.
I think it was. You know, it's hard to argue when you have the result and the way Aubameyang scored 2 goals to get some confidence. Mesut Ozil comes on and gets a goal, and it's a way to see some of the other players, how, you know, like the likes of Iwobi and Welbeck, how they interact with some of the starters. Socrates was very good, and I don't necessarily mind it. I think there was some sort of thought given to this that maybe Vorskla is not as a pushover as you would think of them on paper. And I'm okay with that. You know, these players should be used to playing 2-3 games a week. You know, we've seen them play in the Champions League, and we don't ask them to be rested then. So if the manager and the backroom staff deemed this opposition to be of a high enough quality where we're not going to just throw in some of the really young players, that's fine by me. And let's not forget that we don't really have the youngest of players, even if in our second team, you know, the likes of an Elneny. Are not really young players. If you look younger than them, then it's the last.
You're just dropping in and out there a bit, Schwinn, but I'll get the point. Sarvesh says, Tony, can we finally see the starting 11 that we want against Everton, or do you think there will be some, it'd be a quite a surprise? Some surprise again.
It's difficult because the amount of times I've been wrong. I expect to see what most people would consider our strongest 11. Well, I don't know if it's the strongest, but not our strongest. As I said, I think I agree with Schwinn. I think he'll play Ramsey at 10. But I expect we see basically what we've seen in the last few games, but with Torreira in for Guendouzi. I think Aubameyang coming off at 60 is a telling sign that he's going to be starting. I think Torreira coming off at 60 is a telling sign that he's going to start. So for me, I think the same as we've seen for Cardiff and Newcastle, but Torreira in for Guendouzi.
Okay, I agree. Hakon Larsson, a comment. Iwobi has the potential to be very good left winger. Need to up his tactics, aspects of the game, and his choices and smartness that will come with the coaching and time. Agree, lads? Yep, Snow agrees.
Or he doesn't. We don't really know.
Yeah, he might not. He might be pissed right off. I mentioned the Wobie. Tony probably kicked him, I bet. Got him barking.
He didn't like it, Wobie. No, for me, in terms of the decision making, some players never learn that, some players do. It is something that would add a hell of a lot to Iwobi's game, and I do think it has got better. Yesterday he was a lot better at it, but in the past he's often tended to run at a player and you think brilliant, and then get to him and kind of turn around and pass the ball inside, and it kills a momentum of a lot of attacks. Yesterday he didn't do that, and he went at players, and even if he lost the ball, he didn't mind. There was one time he tried to go on the outside, tried to cross it left footed, and it was blocked. It went out for a throw on or a corner, wherever it went. Usually that's enough work. I'm going to stop. I'm just going to play safe. Yeah, and I'm hoping that's something he's developed, rather than he just thought, oh, we're playing against a load of shit, I can do whatever I want. So hopefully he has got that arrogance, confidence about him to do that now, because he has the ability. He's always had the ability. It's just, I don't know, for whatever reason, he never did do it. So I think that's the what will take him to the next level from where he's at. Mm-hmm. And obviously consistency. And
there's a lot of talk that Emery, he somehow he can manage to get the goodness or the best out of players or young players. So, which I don't understand. I don't really understand the term, because I thought, Wenger could do the same. So people say that Emery's a genius at getting the best out of these young players.
The king is dead, long live the king.
Yeah. So, Hakon Larsson, was some rumours about Pavon. Would that be a decent signing in your opinion? We don't have a fucking winger, so I would celebrate, says Hakon Larsson.
I don't know anything about, I've heard the rumours, I don't know anything about how accurate they are. It's one of them, it's a winger, so everyone would be overjoyed with it. From what I've seen of him, which admittedly isn't much, I've not been amazed. He's not made me jump out of my seat. But a lot of people seem to think he is that great prospect. We'll never know. But, yeah, it's a winger. And I've said on here last week, I was amazed we didn't just buy anyone who could play on the wing to give us that option. So if the rumours are to be true, I think the transfer fee would be very hefty, but at least we would have an option of a winger if we needed an out-and-out wide man that's going to get chalk on their boots.
Is he still at Boca?
Yeah, if that's where he was before, yeah. He said he wanted to stay there for the Copa Libertadores, which is their Champions League, which I believe finishes in December, which is probably why the rumours have started again. If he said, I want to stay there for that, and then that's finishing in December, obviously, conveniently, we have the January transfer window, so I'd imagine that's where some of the rumours have started from.
Yeah, okay. And I knew there was lots of talk in the summer. I wasn't sure whether, I thought somebody like Dortmund might have picked him up or something. That was all.
The rumours have also sort of reignited, because when the announcement was made that Gizgidis will be leaving, I think there was some report that came out that Raul Sanlehi was very, very interested in the summer. And I think that just gave a bit fuel, a bit more fuel to the fire, added with the fact that Libertadores will end in December. So, I think it's a concoction of a couple of things there.
Okay. Hakon hasn't said anything. Vish says, do you feel comfortable with Leno in goal? He is good with his feet, but his shot stopping is not as good as Cech. Do you feel he could have done better on both goals? Pretty much touched on that, didn't we, boys?
Mm-hmm.
Unless you want to add any more onto that with Vish's comment, question?
Nope.
Hakon Larsson. Socrates is a good signing. Iwobi has improved physically. Mickey should play on the right. Ozil in the 10. Torreira is our best midfielder. I can't see Ramsey in our starting 11 if we play a 4-2-3-1. Anyone? Tony?
Well, I would agree. I think I hadn't seen this comment, but it agrees with a lot of what we've said so far. But Emery likes Ramsey as a 10, and it seems no one else does, but it's not us picking the team, unfortunately. Or maybe fortunately, because we're winning games at the moment. But, I agree with most of it. As I say, he can't see Ramsey getting the team. I personally don't think he should in a 4-2-3-1, but Emery does, and it's his opinion that matters, not ours.
Okay, Cosman Buta. How do you guys see Kolasinac's role forward this season? Do you think there is a chance we'll go for an LB this winter? Schwinn?
I don't think we'll go for a left back this winter. It's not a position of high priority, in my opinion. I think the more complicated question is what Glasenac's role will be. And in the preseason, again, he didn't seem to pull trees. He looked a bit better than he has all last season. But Nacho looks comfortable. You know, he's getting up there in age. And I know there's a couple of other questions that question whether he's fit enough to finish games, especially if he's playing, you know, two games in a week.
Yeah, I'll just continue them questions, Schwinn, since you touched on. So Vish says, how does the team selection impact the IPL performance? Monreal looked tired, which is understandable given his age. Will selection such a strong side be determined? Should we incur injuries from fatigue? And then James says, when Koz comes back, do you drop Mustafi, Socrates, or keep Koz on the bench? So it's a little bit, few options there anyway.
Yeah, I mean, left back will still probably be between Monreal and Kolasinac, and I think Monreal will continue unless Kolasinac really shows some improvement, or, you know, we have an injury and Kolasinac comes in and then solidifies his position. I don't really see Monreal being knocked off his perch. As for our center backs, I would expect Mustafi to be dropped. You know, I think Socrates is comfortable playing on the right, obviously, because of his experience predominantly as a right center back. And yesterday he showed he's comfortable with the ball, you know, venturing further forward as well. And we know Koscielny likes to play on the left or the right. He's quite versatile in that regard as well. Mustafi's been very, very good. So it'll be hard for the manager to make that decision swiftly. But again, it has to be made based on if you know, mistakes are being made and not being corrected. I think we're pretty decent in defense, as horrible as that might sound, despite us conceding goals. But I think the personnel are there. It's just about putting them in the right structure.
Okay. Tony, poor as in poor goal. This is from Jay, or Jay Tuong, 27. Poor as in poor goaltending or poor defense, and Leno had no chance for those goals. And we pretty much touched on that. Lack of Lamar, 10. I'd be changing that, brother. Lack of Lamar. Lamar is not coming, my friend. Are you guys worried about our defence, Tony?
Yeah, but not, as I said, not based on yesterday. Yesterday, for me, was just switching off, which obviously you don't want to do, but they were never under pressure when they were focused. But yeah, I mean, we're giving away stupid chances, and sometimes, but sometimes they are. I feel we have, well, especially from the Newcastle and the Cardiff game, we have dropped that little bit deeper, which is what a lot of us were moaning about following the Chelsea and City games and the West Ham game. I feel we have taken 10 yards out of it. But then we've sloppy mistakes. I mean, a few goals from crosses. Obviously, Newcastle, Cardiff, 2 goals from crosses. So there's work to be done. It's not looking as bad as it did in the first 2 weeks in the season. I think he has not completely abandoned the high up, the defensive line on the halfway line, but he's learned that it probably won't cut it in England.
Okay, and last question, Saint Maximum. I like that, Saint Maximum. Would you agree that Monreal has been suspect recently, Schwinn?
I just sort of went over that. So, Tony, I'll throw this to you, and I'll just add, did you think that he looks a bit more tired than usual towards the end of the games since you've been at the stadium?
I've got to admit, I guess is the word, that I barely noticed him yesterday. Not for any negative reason. Like, similar to how I think of Leonard, just didn't do anything great, didn't do anything poorly, which is unusual for Nacho. I think he's all energy. For me, from what I've seen, not including yesterday, I don't think there's been any lapse in energy from him. I don't know if people are just looking at his age and then saying, oh, he must be tired, he's old. But for me, I've not seen anything of him. In terms of, is he looking a bit shaky? Probably partially at fault for Cardiff's first goal. But no, not really. I mean, I remember coming out of Cardiff and most Arsenal fans thought he'd had a decent game, nothing spectacular, nothing poor. And then Warnock come out after the game and said the two Arsenal fullbacks are awful. Well, I'm misquoting, but he said something along those lines. And I personally didn't see that. And I know a lot of Arsenal fans at the time disagreed with what Warnock said. So, I mean, that's only 2 games ago. So then to disagree with Warnock then, but then two games later to say he looks shaky, for me is a best and massive overreaction.
I've got one more question from Maddie through Skype. Was any of the goals savable for Leno? We already touched. And do you think Mickey should start at Everton? If so, in which place, right along with Hector? Anyone?
Yes.
Yes, and...
Yeah, he won't, but he should.
Yep, okay. Righto. And what was the other one? Was any of the girls... Oh, yeah, well, we already touched on that. Okay, thank you for everybody for your questions, and you can always get your questions on Twitter at @clockend_talk. We are on Facebook, but I always forget to look at the fucking Facebook, so just hit us on Twitter because I always check that. Now, boys, coming up, we've got a game against Everton. I'll just run through quickly. We are very heavy favourites, according to my bookie, or Bet365, obviously $1.44 Arsenal. Arsenal are unbeaten in 24 home matches against Everton in all competitions. Premier League defeat since a 2-1 in 1996. And also, Arsenal have scored more Premier League goals against Everton than any other side has managed in a competition's history of 105. Tony, what's your thoughts on this game, buddy?
Yeah, I think I'll just check that our odds here are £1.48, £1.48. I think people are probably going a bit strong because of Everton's poor performance last week against West Ham. They were poor. I think Richarlison is back, but I'm not 100%. If it is, that's a huge boost for them.
It is a big
boost. He is. He will be back, yes.
Yeah, he is, I think.
Yeah, so that's a huge boost for them. I mean, if you look at their results, really, who did they beat when... Richarlison scored two. Oh, they drew with Wolves, didn't they? Beat Southampton. Bournemouth, they played with 10 men for most of the game.
Yeah, two wins, two draws and a loss, but by both.
Yeah, so that's what I'm saying. Before, until last week, they hadn't lost, and they were above us in the league with two wins and two draws, and we had only had two wins and two losses. So, do you know what I mean? It's amazing how a week can change things. I think had we played them last week, the odds would have been completely different. We are obviously favourites, but I think maybe the bookies have overdone it a little bit. I would expect to win. It won't be an easy game. They've got a certain style. They'll play Tosin up front, I'd imagine, with Richarlison and Walcott either side, so they've got pace on the outside. Digne looked good last week, great delivery. Coleman from the other side is always going to be a threat, so you have to worry about their fullbacks as much as their wingers. Maybe a little bit light in the centre of the park. If they play how I expect them to, it'll be Schneiderlin and Garner Gay, who, I mean, for me, I'm a big Idrissa Gueye fan, and Schneiderlin maybe not the quickest, but they'll play deep. They'll play, like I said, two defensive midfielders, which they are, which might make them more difficult to break down. They're not the greatest at centre back. I think Michael Keane's still out. I'm not sure what the situation is with Yerry Mina. He's still not played for them. I know he was in the stands last week, and they said there'd been some complications, but they didn't expand on it, so I don't know if he's injured or not fit or whatever it is. But, I mean, if they're playing... Last week they played Mason Holgate at centre-back and he looked completely out of his depth against Arnautovic. Jackie Elka, he's not great. They're just not brilliant. Zuma played, I think it might have been his debut. Zuma played, but he didn't look match fit last week. So they've got some problems at centre-back and hopefully we can exploit that.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Schwinn?
Yeah, oh, hang on, Tony.
You're going to give us a prediction, Tony?
No.
I'll ask him every week. He'll 10-0. Go, Schwinn.
Yeah, I mean, very tough to follow up on anything that Tony said because he comprehensively picked out on everything. Only quickly, I think Coleman is not available. I think he's suffering from a foot injury. So that's one thing we can exploit, especially if Aubameyang is going to continue on the left, and at least it's against probably an inexperienced defender. So that's even better. It'll be
John Joe Kenny, I imagine.
And there you go. And did you touch on Zuma?
I think it was his debut last week. I'm not sure he played. He didn't look as the colossus that he has done in the past. I don't know if it was his debut. He didn't look sharp at all.
he didn't, and Everton obviously didn't do very well against West Ham. So if there's something to take from that game is that they are struggling a bit. I do fear their wingers a bit. You know, if you're going to enjoy the lion's share of possession, then they have a lot of pace. Cenk Tosun is a strong center forward as well, who can give Sokratis and Mustafi a bit of a trouble, especially in the air. So hoping that we can control the game and dominate the midfield, I think if we can do that, we'll be able to get the 3 points.
Prediction?
Oh, let's go for 3-1 to the Arsenal.
Oh, no. I'll just add quickly, Walcott played like a busted ass last week against West Ham, and I dropped him out of my fantasy league like a bag of shit. Fucking so. But he's likely to come out and have a fucking blinder against Arsenal, so... I'm going to say 3-2. What did you say? 3-1.
3-1, yep.
Don't sound like I'm copying you. 3-2. Get on it, lads. Get on it. That'll pay for about $12. I just got to touch quickly. And look, for me, I don't really care either way, because and I know there's a lot of hype and a lot of talk on Twitter about Ivan Kazidis leaving Arsenal. For me, as I said to you boys, look, he came in, he done a job, he left to a better job or a higher paying job. I don't really care. I looked at the club and I never was worried to think that the club was, oh shit, we're going bankrupt or there was problems. But there was a lot of talk with Arsenal fans on Twitter and whatnot and different social sites, so I just thought I'd touch on it quickly, boys. Tony?
Yeah, just a couple of things surprised me. One, that it seemed like he's craved power for such a long time at Arsenal and it seemed to get it, and he's put good people in place, but then sort of jumped ship at the time, which, again, is surprising. If you wait so long, 7-8 years for something, you tend not to give it up after 6 months. The other thing that surprised me, and it's to his credit, I guess, which I've not seen many people give him credit for anything, but I looked at some of the numbers that had changed since he'd been CEO, and the commercials have gone up massively, the club value has gone up massively, and I know these things are, as fans, we don't really value because we only care about what happens on the pitch, but his job is to his actual job, he's done what his boss Kroenke and partially Usmanov have asked of him. So I guess it probably will be a bit bittersweet for Arsenal to lose him, because in terms of what they want him for, he's done very well at his job. I know Schwinn has stronger thoughts and probably more knowledge than me on this, so
okay. Let's ask him. Schwinn?
I think a lot of the reaction is very impulsive. It's very emotional. It's very similar to the reaction we saw when the KAC takeover news came out. And I think it's very preemptive. I think, in general, Ivan Gazidis is not one who is, popular with the fans, and for good reason. He's been at the club for 10 years, but we've only felt the effect of it as fans. We felt the effect of it in the last 2 years. As Tony said, he's done a lot of work behind the scenes. And look, I'm no fan of Gazidis, but because he's going doesn't mean we have to slate him. It seems like unless we let someone go, whether that's a player or a manager or a backroom staff member, it's not okay for someone to leave the club. And I think it's a bit Stockholm syndrome-y in that case. I think it's a new phase for Arsenal Football Club with the takeover. And generally speaking, you will not have a CEO at an organization for more than 5, 7, 8 years. The fact that he's going is not a bad thing. I think it's speaking to a bigger picture. And I think this is underlined by inside promotions. Because that means we have a strategy devised and we believe in the people inside from within to be able to lay out this strategy and execute it. You only bring a person from the outside when you need a breath of fresh ideas. And that's not been the case. I think the structure has evolved. We've seen the CEO position being divided into the managing director, which is Vinay Venkatesham. He's going to be the guy taking care of the business and the commercial element. And then we have Rahul Sanlehi, who is going to be the head of football, who's going to take care of all the football aspects. So you have this clear demarcation, and at the same time, you have a person who is going to be taking, you have people taking care of different responsibilities. I think it's a welcome change. I think it's a bold decision, and I'm very happy with it. My only question that remains in this is, what will Josh Kroenke's role going to be? for anyone who saw the press release, it was Josh who gave a message in the press release and not Stan, which is a bit unusual, which, you know, states that maybe Josh is a bit more hands-on and you know, prevalent in terms of making decisions. So I can see him being around. I can see him, you know, being someone in charge of the big picture and guiding these people. And I would like a bit more involvement from him so that people at KSC, especially at high up, understand what troubles we're facing and how to come up with creative solutions. So for me, it's a positive change. I'm not worried about it one way or the other. And it's a new era for our football club. And, you know, bring it on. Let's see where this takes us.
And that he's taken one half of the role. How'd you say the other guy's name?
Vinay Venkatesham.
Okay, I think you're the only one of us that will be saying that.
I think that's how it's spelled, isn't it?
You lost me. No, I'm not. Yeah, mate, you did a great job, I think.
Yeah. We can just go with Vinay, right? Vinay is pretty easy.
Vinny will do.
I like Vinny. I'll run with fucking Vinny, thank you. Righto, that's about it, boys. We've got under the hour, which is fucking brilliant. It's usually 2.5 hours. I'm not going to quick rambling on. Did you boys catch the Manchester United Burnley game last week?
Burnley.
I don't think so.
No, was it Burnley? Yeah, Burnley, Manchester United.
Man United didn't play Burnley, so no, because they played Watford.
Hang on, yeah. That was. Shit.
Didn't they beat Burnley like 3-0 or something at some point? I remember. I have faint memory.
Maybe. I want Rashford to get sent off, but that wasn't last week.
No,
it wasn't. It was, it was Wolverhampton Burnley.
Yeah, we was watching it as we was recording last week, and Wolverhampton Wolves battered them for about 70 minutes and were just struggling to score.
Yeah, because I was actually going to say, is Joe Hart going to be making that spot for England, you reckon, in the near future?
No, I think Southgate's going to not make an example of him, but I think his time is done. I think it's just one that he did have a very good game, actually, to be fair.
Yeah.
But I think Jack Wilshere is injured, but I think he's in a similar position with Southgate, where unless he literally tears up the league and is in a contender for player of the year, he's probably not going to get back in the squad. As I said, Southgate makes up reasons why he's not picking people. And then when they fit all that criteria, he doesn't pick them anyway. So I think there's certain people he's just not got in his plans, be it right or wrong. I'm not criticising him. It's just,
yeah.
As I said, I think there's certain players that are never going to work their way back in.
Yeah. No, I just, when I was watching, I thought, fucking, and I know Joe Hart gets a lot of stick, but, you know, and he's gone to bloody over, you know, Serie A and that, and I think, and he hasn't played well. And I thought he had a really good game, so. So I just thought I'd mention it. But anyway, nothing to do with Arsenal. So, boys, thank you again. We'll catch all you lads on after the Everton game Monday night. Or Monday for you, boys.
Yep.
Okay, you've been listening to the Clock End Talk. You can follow us at clockend_talk. You can read Savvy's ratings at clockendtalk.blogspot.com. And thank you. And we'll speak yours then. Bye.
Adios.
Cheers.